Well, hi everybody, and welcome to the very first ever Microsoft Learn Live series. So Microsoft Learn Live, the series of guided courses designed to increase your knowledge of Azure and hopefully to do it in a way where you can apply the lessons learned to your own projects as well. So we are your hosts for what is going to be an incredible series of classes. My name's Kim Philpotts. Over here is my good friend Glenn Stevens. So Glenn, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and I will bring up some details for you.
Cool. Hi, Kim. Hi, everyone. Thanks. So my name is Glenn Stevens. I'm a senior content developer here at Microsoft, part of the Microsoft Learn Live team. I've been developing software for a long time. I love to build things. I love to build apps. And I'm looking forward to sharing my knowledge with everyone over the course of the next few classes. Kim, if you'd like to introduce yourself as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Kim Philpotts. I'm also a senior content developer at Microsoft. I also like to build things as well. I'm based in Melbourne, Australia. And over here on the side, you can see my contact details. If you ever want to reach out with any questions, let me know. But yeah, I've been building software for a lot of years. And of course, now I love to work in Azure. So lots of fun times to be had in Azure. Okay, so let's just quickly have a talk about what Microsoft Learn Live is. And you know, some of you will have undoubtedly, had experience with Azure. Some of you might have a little bit of experience. Some of you might have a lot of experience. But our mission here at Learn Live is to guide you through creating solutions. So we hope to join the dots together between the various parts of Azure. So instead of just teaching a particular part, we teach whole solutions. Now, of course, there's a lot of great information about Azure out there. So both in the doc side, and hopefully everyone's had an opportunity to have a look at the Learn site as well. In fact, I'll put a little link down the bottom in case you haven't visited the Learn site. There's some really, really good information in there. Thanks, Glenn, for pointing to that for me. Beautiful. Okay, so the question I suppose is, how is Learn Live different from all the content that's out there already? Well, I think the first thing is we're interactive. So we're live at the moment. We love interactivity. So if you've got any questions, make sure you pop any questions into the chat window. There is a slight delay between, what you're seeing and the response. It's only a few seconds, but if you post a question there and we don't get to it immediately, don't worry, we will get through to them all. So please do post your questions. The other important thing about Learn Live is that it's built from the ground up with education in mind. So over at Learn Live, we've got a series of instructional designers and developers and content creators all working together to bring you a targeted series of content specifically designed for learning Azure. So
Cool. And Kim, I think it's really important just to reiterate that we're live and interactive. Just so if anyone has any questions, feel free to post them in on the chat window. And we'll try and get through as many questions as we can. But if we can't, or maybe if there's too many, we do have an amazing moderator on the line, Rob Gibbons, who will be helping out with the overflow or some questions that we don't get to. So again, just feel free to interact by asking questions or just saying hello. Tell us where you're from. We'd love to hear it.
It's always good to know where people are from. So fantastic. Okay, so today's session, this is the first course, I suppose, at Learn Live. And what we've done is we've created a scenario where we are assuming that we're .NET developers, we're working on an in-house system, and it's time to make the move to the cloud. And so really we're aiming this content at sort of beginner to intermediate users of Azure. And I think to get the most out of this session, hopefully you're familiar with Visual Studio, a little bit of C#, maybe the basics of ASP.NET Core. And of course, we're not going to go into a lot of depth in ASP.NET Core. So it's not crucial that you have a thorough understanding of it because we're going to walk you through any code that we have as well. But it might help you to read the code a little bit. And hopefully you've got a little bit of experience with SQL as well. So in future sessions, we'll be doing a little bit of SQL stuff, potentially with working with SQL in an on-premise SQL Server installation.
Cool. Now, there's also a few other things, Kim, as well, as you know. Ideally, you should be familiar with what Azure is and the concepts of the cloud. You would have navigated the Azure portal ideally. Maybe you've even created some Azure resources, tried out some demos, or even better, you might have gone through some Microsoft Learn modules. So those are good things to have done.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're actually going to use a number of tools throughout the series. A key tool that we're going to use is Visual Studio. And I'm actually going to use Visual Studio on Visual Studio 2019 on a PC, but you can actually use any of the variants as well. So there's, you know, Visual Studio 2019 on a PC. There's Visual Studio Code, which is available to you on Mac and Linux and also PC. There's also Visual Studio Mac as well. But regardless of that, what you'll really want to have if you want to work through the exercises is the .NET Core workload installed. So you know, you can basically go and build and run the solutions. And actually the solution that we have, it's been around for a while, so we're migrating something which is built in ASP.NET Core 2.2. Now, if you don't have that version of ASP.NET Core on your system, you can download it. In fact, what I might do is just post a link into the chat here. There we are, in case you need that. Now, apart from these tools, right, it wouldn't be an Azure course if we didn't use the portal, right? So we're going to have a look at the Azure portal, and we're also going to have a look at GitHub as well to go and access some code, and we'll talk through that in a moment. Now, as well as that, we're going to introduce you to some really cool tools throughout the series. We're going to introduce you to something called the Data Migration Wizard, which does pretty much what the name implies. It allows us to migrate our data. We've got the Azure Data Studio, which is a really fantastic way of working with your data sources, and something called the Azure Storage Explorer as well. But we're actually not using those tools in today's session. We're just going to be using Visual Studio and the Azure portal, as well as GitHub for our code.
Cool. So that's awesome, some awesome tools there. I just want to make a call out, Kim, for a few seconds. There's a few people have said hello in the chat window. There was Anonymous came through, just wanted to say hello. This is so cool. Yeah, we think so too. And Zadeep, good evening from Wisconsin, USA. Nice. Excited to be here. We're excited to have you here too.
Yeah, welcome.
Cool. So I wanted to speak on some of the more of the other tools. So we're talking about code. In particular, Kim, all the code for the series is located over at GitHub at the URL aka.ms.vanars.repo. So we've got a link to the chat window. It's probably been posted already, but we might post that again. And ideally, what you want to do is to clone, download, or fork the repository so you can have it locally and build it and run it. It's also got some excellent artifacts for you to use and some documentation and some scripts that are very useful as we go through the process.
Yeah. Why don't I just jump over there quickly, Glenn?
Good idea.
Okay, so I'll come over to my browser here, AKMS vanars.repo. The link is down the bottom of the screen here. So this is where the code for the course is, but also what you'll find if you sort of, before that, what Glenn was mentioning is, when you work with this, you're probably going to want to fork this and then download that code onto your local machine. And if I scroll down here a little bit further under the series overview, this is actually pretty handy here, where we learn about the Azure technologies covered in this session. And that will take us essentially to a learn module. Okay, and in this learn module, it's going to have all of the steps required for you to prepare for each of these sessions. So there's not a lot for this one, but if you're attending future sessions, you might want to have a look at this ahead of time and just and prepare, basically. And so if we have a look at that, we can see down through here, we've got the steps for preparing your environment, how to follow along, and also some of the resources that we're going to cover off as we go through there as well. So hopefully that will help you out. Now, what we probably want to have a look at, first of all, is the scenario in a little bit more detail. So, you know, we want to talk a little bit about some of the challenges that we're facing in terms of our scenario, the application we're going to migrate and run into the cloud. So, Glenn, do you want to walk us through some of that information?
Yeah, of course. So in our scenario for the next series of classes, we're imagining we're working for a fictitious company called Van Arsdell. And Van Arsdell is in the real estate business. And as part of this, they run a really lovely website where they're selling real estate property. And the project's built with ASP.NET Core, and it uses a SQL Server database. It's currently hosted on premises at the headquarters of Van Arsdell, running on their own infrastructure. And the developers are just used to manually deploying code to the server. So all in all, it's a pretty common combination. And a lot of systems out there in legacy will have an environment like that. So I think you probably found the same experience, Kim.
Yeah, this is, you know, this is pretty common. It's probably, you know, it's just about what you get out of the box when you do a file new ASP.NET Core project, actually.
Yeah, that's true. And look, even though it's a typical scenario, there's a number of challenges that Van Arsdale are facing as a result of being on premises. So things like scalability. So right now the website is experiencing challenges due to its popularity, and it's only going to get more popular with their marketing efforts planned. And they're also moving out to more regions as well, and that's going to have an impact on the demand, and the on-premises environment may not be able to be up to the challenge. We've also got issues with maintenance. Being on premises means that Van Arsdale are responsible for the support and the maintenance of the infrastructure. And of course, that means they're also responsible for things like operating system upgrades, for patches, and also some security concerns around that as well. They're not sure how even physically safe their environment is. You've got issues with future-proofing. They want to make sure they're in a position that they can grow their business without technical limitations imposed on their on-premises environment. So for Van Arsdale, I think it's probably a good time to explore moving to the cloud just to address just those few challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, moving to the cloud can actually mean a lot of different things. You know, it's not just sort of one particular way that we do it. But for Van Arsdale, they've kind of got some requirements for their migration. Now, the very first thing is that they don't want to completely rewrite their solution. Nobody likes to rewrite their solution from the ground up. So they want to go and leverage their existing skills in ASP.NET Core and SQL. But of course, they're not moving to the cloud for no reason. They want to get some benefits out of moving. So things like being able to quickly and easily scale their solution to meet their demand. But also a big thing for them as well is they want to retire their on-premises infrastructure. And then what they're hoping is that moving to the cloud will actually make their application a little bit more secure by not having to worry about patching and maintaining their infrastructure. Because, you know, in the past, probably like a lot of people, I'm guilty of this, Glenn, I got to say. You know, haven't always kept up to date with the latest patches, you know, and that can be a big concern. But of course, they also want to make sure it's affordable as well. And a big part of that is making sure that they're not actually rewriting their application. So that's some of their goals, I suppose, in moving to the cloud. And they're probably fairly common goals for a lot of people. So I guess the question, Glenn, is how do we go about helping Van Arsdale get there?
Cool. That's a good question. I just want to pop over to the chat for a second. We've got a few other people that are coming through. Shane and Shriram, I hope I'm saying that right as well. Thanks for just saying hi. There's another question here as well, because we're talking about the affordability of it before. There's a question, while I have access to an Azure subscription, do we need to have credits? My credits ran out. Been there. I think we've all been there if you use Azure. But we're going to show you a way where you can... we can follow along with all our steps here using a sandbox we'll talk about later, which is not going to cost you anything. So we'll talk about that. We'll come to that a little bit later. Kim will show you how that's done. But I want to go back and talk about the goals you had raised, Kim. So why don't we take a look at their current environment and the strategy that we can look at for migrating to the cloud.
Sure.
Now, to start off with, right now, Van Arsdale are in an on-premises environment, which is hosting their website. And we're going to move that across to using an Azure App Service. And then in addition to that, they've also got an on-premises SQL Server, which we're going to replace with an Azure SQL Server. At the same time, we'll also migrate that data from the on-premises environment into the cloud. Also, currently they're storing all their real estate images on the web server. So we're going to use Azure Blob Storage to centralize that, and also to provide us some more scalability. And also to help the developers out, we're going to move from a manual build and deployment on the developer's machine across to automatically build and deploy their code base from GitHub. So once we're up in the cloud, we can then take advantage of some great benefits of Azure, like monitoring and scalability, and also put us in a really great position to use a lot of other Azure capabilities that we're probably not even addressing in this course, but that are definitely out there and definitely have a lot of value. So that's what we're going to be doing with the solution, Kim. So how are we going to cover that in the series, though?
Yeah, well, we're going to break this down. We're going to sort of do it in a few different steps. But first of all, I should mention, you know, this series at Learn Live, Moving to the Cloud, is just our very first course that we're going to be teaching, right? So from here, what we're going to do is we're going to move on to other courses in the future, which are going to cover all range of different Azure topics. But for this session, or this series, I should say, we have 5 sessions, and each session probably going to take between about 60 and 90 minutes. And what we're going to cover off in here, in this very first session, we're going to actually go and, you know, take, we're going to talk about the different hosting options that we have in the cloud, and we're going to migrate the website to the cloud, right? So just the website itself. Then what we're going to do in our next session is we're going to migrate the database from our on-premises. We're going to push that up into the cloud. And then, as you mentioned, Glenn, we're going to help out the developers and make our developers happy. And we all like happy developers. So we're going to talk about automatic deployment. So instead of, you know, a particular developer having to push those changes, probably on a Friday afternoon, because that's how it happens, instead, we're actually going to automate those from GitHub as well. And once we're there, we're pretty much, you know, all up in the cloud. And that's where we can start taking advantage of some of the sort of cloud features like for example, Azure Storage. So we'll have a look at that in the following session. And then in our very last session, we're going to have a look at a very, very important thing, which is about monitoring and scaling our applications, which of course is one of the big benefits of being in the cloud. Okay, so with that, that's sort of our plan for our sessions. Let's have a look at our objectives for today's class. Really, we've got 2 objectives. The very first thing we're going to do is we're going to do a little bit of theory, if you like. We're going to investigate, and we're ultimately going to choose an appropriate hosting model for the Van Arsdale solution. And then what we're going to do is we're going to deploy that Van Arsdale solution into Azure. So we're going to move that website. Now, you know, for those of you a little bit familiar with the cloud, you might be aware that there's a number of different approaches for hosting a solution. And we mentioned this earlier, there isn't just a single one size fits all strategy for migrating our applications. It turns out that, you know, really the right migration strategy is going to depend on your organization's needs. It's going to depend on the skills you have in your team, your priorities as well, you know, and also just the kind of application you're going to migrate. So let's first of all have a look at the migration approaches and the hosting models. And let's just start off with on-premises, you know, so the default, I suppose, for some people. So Glenn, what do you think about when you're thinking about on-premises solutions?
Well, personally, I think about on-premises as that's a lot of work, but on-premises is really the traditional non-cloud approach, which you'll often hear referred to also as on-prem for short. And that's where you have the physical servers or maybe virtual machines on your physical servers that you use for your application. They're purchased by you or your company, ideally your company, and they're also hosted by your company in a server closet, a server room, or maybe a data center where your company places all that hardware. And in this situation, your business is not only responsible for building your application, but also acquiring, installing, and configuring an operating system and physical hardware like the server machines, the network cables, infrastructure, redundant power supply, all the disk drives you need. There's a lot of work, like I said, and there's a lot of things to manage. And I've been that person that manages all that stuff in an on-premises environment. It tends to be really costly in terms of upfront capital expenditure, but also requires skills, time, and money to keep running. So when we decide to take our solution to the cloud, we've got a number of options, starting with infrastructure as a service or IaaS. So Kim, why don't you walk us through IaaS if you don't mind?
Yeah, okay. So as the name implies, IaaS or infrastructure as a service, this is you know, essentially where we're offloading the infrastructure to the cloud. Okay, so your applications would have pretty much the same composition as before, but what we're doing is we're deploying those into virtual machines that we have in the cloud. So we're, you know, we're basically just moving those machines into the cloud, if you like. And this is kind of a simple type of migration. It's one that's pretty common, typically known in the industry as like lift and shift or, you know, rehosting. And one of the great advantages of this is, you know, all of that hardware is taken care of by your cloud provider. You know, so you can see here that all of a sudden we're no longer responsible for the, you know, the data center power and things like that. The cloud provider manages those. But we are still responsible for maintaining and patching those virtual machines. So, you know, infrastructure as a service is certainly one way we could deploy our application and, you know, get a lot of control over the environment. And it's certainly great when you do need that firm control over, you know, particular bits of software that are running on a particular machine if you have that requirement. But, you know, often when we're building applications, we can actually push a lot more of the responsibility to Azure, right? We can use something called platform as a service. So Glenn, talk us through platform as a service.
Cool. So platform as a service, or PaaS for short, that's where we're raising the level of abstraction above infrastructure as a service. So we don't have to think about all that low level infrastructure components, things like the operating system and patches, et cetera. All of that's taken care of us by Azure, and we just focus on building the application and adding business features and business value. For a lot of non-complex applications, it can be done fairly simply, and it doesn't require a lot of code changes. And PaaS is actually really powerful. If you need more compute power because we have a growing user base, we don't need to buy more servers or create more virtual machines and then configure each machine. With PaaS, we just simply ask Azure to scale up or scale out for us. And we're going to talk about scaling in the fifth episode of our series, but the idea is that with PaaS, we get Azure to do much more work for us in terms of managing the bits that maybe we don't care so much about. And there's probably other options as well you might have heard of. For example, serverless or cloud native. Kim, do you want to let us know about that one?
Yeah, so this is kind of interesting, right? This is another option we have is becoming totally cloud native, right? And this is where we're talking about kind of re-architecting our solution very specifically for the cloud. And often you'll hear things, or it'll involve things like containers or serverless functions, microservices. And that's a great place to be, particularly if you're a greenfields project, because you can build your application, you can take full advantage of the cloud. But the thing to be aware of is that it does require re-architecting your solution. So for existing solutions like we have, there would be a lot of rewrite. So essentially what we have is we've got three different models available to us. We can sort of see the spectrum of them in this slide, from infrastructure as a service through to cloud native. Now, what I thought we might do here, Glenn, is we might just have a little bit of a question. It's actually a pretty big question. So I'll read it out here. So if anyone wants to answer, feel free to answer into the chat window. But the question here, with Van Arsdale, we've talked about that solution. It's a pretty simple application, ASP.NET Core. It just accesses a database. Now, they have some migration requirements. They want to have a minimal number of code changes, and they also are very keen to reduce their management of infrastructure, right? So they don't want to be running those machines. They don't want to be patching things. So what do people think would be the preferred hosting model for the Van Arsdale solution? So the options are A, let's go with infrastructure as a service. Option B, platform as a service. And option C, rewrite the application to be totally cloud native. We'll pause there for a second. We'll see if we get some answers into the chat window.
Yeah, it's an interesting dilemma, and it's worth saying that not all organizations are the same as well, and they'll have different challenges and similar situations or very different situations. I don't think I've ever seen two organizations that are really that similar.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, but we've got a few answers coming through.
Okay, I'm liking these answers, Glenn. I can see quite a few B's, a bit of PaaS in there. Fantastic. Cool. And just while we're waiting to see a few answers, let me just quickly bring up a really, really useful link for people, which is, you may have seen this. This is the Azure Architecture Center. So the Azure Architecture Center is fantastic. It's got a whole bunch of different design patterns for different scenarios. It's got a bunch of different technologies in here. It's got the Cloud Adoption Framework, which is fantastic for walking you through things to consider when moving to the cloud. So that's actually really, really useful information. Let me just post that into the chat window.
Cool. Yeah, it's a great reference. There's some sample code there with good reference implementations and a lot of information and certainly something worth bookmarking.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So let's jump back over here. Let's talk a little bit about our poll question here. We've talked about the different models. So if we bring it back to our real estate project, our Van Arsdale one here, Like we said, we've got a pretty simple web-based application. Doesn't require any specific customizations to, you know, operating systems or hardware. So I think the approach that makes the most sense is platform as a service, right? And it has a few key advantages. What do you think, Glenn? You agree?
Well, I agree. I think infrastructure as a service, I mean, it has the problem where we want to reduce the management of the infrastructure. So that second bullet point applies there. You wouldn't choose IaaS just for that feature alone. Cloud native requires a rewrite. So we want to do minimal code changes. So PaaS is probably the best option for Van Arsdale going forward.
Yeah. And in fact, there was a really good comment from Shiram, hopefully I'm saying that one right. He said, assuming the portal is live, you know, your application is live, rewriting would be my last option. Yeah. So I think that's good. So yeah, PaaS, you know, takes away a lot of those headaches for us about managing the infrastructure, allows us to focus on, you know, delivering your application. And, you know, we did say that one of Van Arsdale's goals is to keep the code base unchanged wherever possible. But the cool thing is, you know, once we're in the cloud, we can go ahead and we can take advantage of all of those good cloud things or cloud offerings. So things like storage and content delivery networks and cognitive services, all that really cool stuff as well. Okay, so awesome. Everyone seemed to be answering similar to what we were thinking, Glenn. PaaS is a good option for us there. All right. Now, the question now, I suppose, Glenn, is, you know, we've got our web application. We want to host it in Azure. How do we go about doing that? I think Azure App Services is a good place, right? That's a good place to go if you want to build an application or an API that runs on a platform in the cloud. So, Glenn, you know lots about this. So why don't you give us a quick run through of App Services?
Cool. Yeah, well, App Services, well, an app service really is a host for a web-based application. And if you want to push the real estate app into Azure, what we can do is we can create an app service resource within Azure and deploy our app into it. So App Services supports a really wide variety of technologies and application types. So for example, you could do something very simple. You could have a traditional web application that just serves HTML to a browser, or you could have something more complex like a content management solution or an e-commerce site or a blog, and host that there. And you can write those applications in a number of different languages and technology stacks. But Azure actually has you covered there as well. Our example for Van Arsdale is written in ASP.NET using C#, but you could be using Node.js or PHP or Java or Python or Ruby. And there's a number of frameworks and languages behind the scenes that are supported. Not only that, App Services supports both Windows and Linux environments, as well as applications that are built into Docker containers. It's really versatile. So if you're building anything for the web, App Services can be the platform that'll host your application or service. So we're not going to have time to do all the platforms and all the features, Kim, but today we'll use an App Service to deploy our real estate ASP.NET Core application into the cloud, but a lot of the same principles that we talk about here will apply to the other frameworks and languages too when we go through the portal. But before we launch in and create an app service, we also need to talk about something called an app service plan. And an app service plan defines a set of compute resources for a web app to run. And these compute resources are very similar to a server farm in conventional web hosting. So try and think of the app service plan as something that describes the performance characteristics of the machine that'll host the app service. And there's a number of different app service plans that range from the free shared environments right through to super high-end dedicated machines. And also, not surprisingly, different plans will come with different costs. So we're gonna use the free option today. There's some questions about the Azure credits before, so we'll keep to that. But we're also gonna discuss this a little bit later in the series too, but we don't need the biggest, baddest app service plan to begin with. One of the great things about cloud and app services is we can scale them out or up as needed. So scale them out, meaning we'll add more machines, or scale them up, meaning we'll add or make a more powerful machine as the demand increases. So we'll show you how you can monitor this a little bit later when we talk about monitoring and scaling in our fifth class in the series. But really, what's important to understand about an app service plan is that it really does represent a machine that's provisioned in the cloud that hosts your application. And just like any machine that hosts applications, you can place multiple applications on that machine. And in fact, that's a pro tip for keeping your costs low. I've got to admit, I say this a few too many times, Kim, but it wasn't until a few years ago that I was creating one app service plan for each app service. And that was actually costing me money. And it was, I was very glad that you pointed that out to me at the time.
Yeah, I think it's a very common thing. You know, people will, when they're creating an app service, they'll spin up an app service plan as well at the same time. And, you know, if you think about this in a traditional sort of sense, normally you don't have a server, just one application on one server. For every application, you have a different server, you know. So you can have multiple app services on an app service plan. And it's actually the app service plan that you're paying for. So it's a good way of reducing costs, essentially. Yeah, beautiful. Okay, now before we move on to our second objective, we're going to ask another question here, just to sort of check our knowledge. The question here is, which is the best definition of an app service plan? Is it A, a signed agreement guaranteeing performance? Is it B, an actual instance of your web application? Or is it C, it determines the resources available to your application? So conceptually, it's like a server in an on-premises environment.
Cool. You know what, Kim, I really love that there are so many answers to the first question. I hope we get the same amount again. That was a really good interactivity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even reading through some of the comments. So Shane was saying Azure Web Apps is nice. Yeah, we think so too.
Yeah, I think we can see that, you know, in some of these, people have felt this pain in the
past. Oh, yeah.
I can see some answers coming through.
Cool. You know, I love the fact that you said people have felt this pain, because addressing the pain is really useful. It makes us better and makes us grow.
Makes us stronger.
Yes.
Fantastic. There was also a question about, is this being recorded? Yes, it is being recorded. I think Rob's answered that one.
Beautiful. Yes. I think there'll be a link sent afterwards. Apparently. Yeah, I'll just scroll through the answers.
Right. Okay, so I've seen a few answers, and I think most people have said C. Yeah, an app service plan is kind of conceptually like a server in an on-premises environment. It's what, you know, hosts your web applications. What do you think, Glenn? Is that the right answer?
I think it is, Kim. We've got a good group of people on the line with us today. Awesome.
Fantastic. All right. So let's have a quick look at where we're up to then. We've talked about app services plan. We've talked about different hosting models. We've decided to go PaaS for our solution, which is great. Our second objective is to actually go and put some of this knowledge into practice. So the very first thing that we're going to want to do here is actually go and, you know, if we look across here, we're going to create ourselves an app service plan. We're going to then go and create an app service. We're then going to go ahead and configure deployment from Visual Studio. There's a lot of different ways we can do that, so we'll talk about that as we go through. And finally hit the button, right, and make it actually go in and deploy to Azure or up into the cloud there. So I mentioned this, Glenn, you know, there's a lot of different ways, right, that we can create an app service plan, right? We can do it through the command line. We can do it through the portal. We can do it through Visual Studio or Visual Studio Code. You know, there's heaps of different ways, probably a dozen ways that I don't even know about. So there's lots of these options, but I think we're going to start with the portal, right? Because the portal's a really good place to start, because it allows us to visualize things. So I think we'll go and have a look at creating things in the portal.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And in fact, the portal is really useful, especially for languages that are maybe not Visual Studio based or C# based. For example, you might run something like the Ghost as your blogging engine, and then deploy that, which is a PHP app. So little things like that are very useful to know as well. But in fact, Kim, before we switch over to the portal, we should also let everyone know about that little bonus that we had for them before. Now, the following exercise requires you to have either a free trial subscription for Azure or a paid subscription. And if you can use one of those, great, you're all set. But if you run out of free credits, there's a question about this just before. We didn't write that question, honestly. We've got something else, which is the Azure Learn Live Sandbox. And you can activate that over at aka.ms/learnlivesandbox. I think Kim's going to post that link into the chat window.
Yeah, so let's have a quick look at that, shall we, Glenn? So let me just make sure I'm posting the right link here. So if you go to Van Arsdale repo, let's have a look at that. So I'll go to the Van Arsdale repo, which is going to take you to this repo in GitHub. Now, I just mentioned sort of coming to it here under the series overview. You can click on this link. That's going to take us to that learn module that we talked about. That's probably just the easiest way to get here. And then what we can do is we can go ahead, once we go start, this is our first page, which tells us a little bit about what the series is going to cover. But if we continue on to prepare for session one, what's going to happen here is there's this little link here to activate the sandbox. So the sandbox, some people are probably, well, actually, I assume probably a lot of people have taken some learn modules in the past, so you're probably familiar with this one. The idea is that we can go and we can activate the sandbox, and that gives us, well, I suppose a sandbox, right, Glenn, to play around with.
Yeah, that's right. Essentially, it provides you with a bunch of free Azure resources that you can use to follow along with these exercises. You just have to keep in mind that these rules, the resources that you create won't be persistent. So they'll last for about 4 hours, roughly. And the sandbox will clean itself up after that time. But the upside is it's completely free, doesn't require any credit card either. The only thing needed is a free Microsoft account, which you probably already have anyway. The sandbox also makes use of a very specific subscription called the Concierge subscription. And once you activate your sandbox, you want to make sure you're picking the Concierge subscription for any resources that you create. I think Kim's going to show us that a little bit later, but it makes sure that we're able to delete all the resources that you create, so you don't run into any expenses related to what we're creating during our sessions. In fact, there was a comment from Anonymous in the chat window. He said the cloud makes it easy to save a ton of money or to shoot yourself in the foot, which is kind of an interesting comment. But what we're trying to do for you, Anonymous, is to basically say the application of knowledge is power for you. And if you know the right things to do, I would highly encourage you, if you're creating services, to just monitor what you're doing, especially the time after you do it. Use services like the cost calculator as well, and just be vigilant around that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
There's another question as well, Glenn.
Yes.
Can I jump from a website in Framework 2.0 to Azure, or do I need to ladder up version by version?
Well, I've deployed Framework 2 version, 2 applications. When we go through the frameworks a little bit later, we'll show you what's there. It's probably a good time. So yeah, watch this space, Ken, and we'll come back to it.
Yep, fantastic. All right, so just quickly back on our sandbox here, just sort of cover off this. We can see that the sandbox is activated. I've got 3 hours, 58 minutes. So what's gonna happen at the end of that time, it's gonna go and clear out all those resources. So it's not gonna cost you any money, which is lovely. That's what we like. Now, the important thing, I suppose, to make sure that you're using the sandbox is if I come over to my portal, and I'm just going to refresh the portal. All right. And if I come up here, let me go a little bit full screen here for people. You can see I've got some credits left. If I come up to the top here and I switch directory, and I think our heads are going to be in the way, so I'll get rid of our heads here, Glenn. You can see that it says down here, I've got my Microsoft one, and there's this Microsoft Learn sandbox. So this here is our sandbox that we want to be using. So if we select that one, we're then going to be, it'll refresh the portal, and all things going well, up the top here, it's going to show us the Microsoft Learn sandbox up there. And so that's your indication that, you know, you are actually creating resources in the sandbox, and they will get cleaned up and they won't cost you any money. Beautiful. Okay, so now, given that we're in the sandbox here, Glenn, and we're in the portal, why don't we go ahead and create some resources?
Good plan.
And if you remember, the very first thing we wanted to do, we wanted to create ourselves an app service plan, right? So a couple of ways I can get started. I can come up here and I can click create a resource, or I can create a resource from the top menu here. So I'll go ahead, select create a resource. And now what we asked for is, you know, what kind of resource do we want? And we want an app service plan. So there's a number of different ways you can sort of navigate this this section. One way is to look down the left hand side here for the sort of thing you're after. And, you know, perhaps I'm after some web stuff and I can select on web and then it'll list those out. You can also, you know, just select something from the right hand side, or you can always just you know, type in some words, right? So I can say app service, and here we are, we can see there's an app service plan. Beautiful. So let's go and select this. And we're now taken to this screen here, Glenn, where it's, I just popped our heads back on the screen, where we can create it. So this is like the overview page. Now, Glenn, you reminded me of this because, you know, you always point out to me whenever I'm sort of looking at a new service and I'm not sure where to go, you're like, well, go and have a look at the useful links, right?
So yeah, well, they're really great. Every time I develop an app with Azure and I want to try out a new service, or I'm implementing a service that I've already used but I want to know a little bit more, I'll go into the documentation. I just find the resources are really focused and great to solve a lot of challenges. I do a lot of applications that use Azure Storage. That's one of the fundamentals. I find the documentation around that delightful. Likewise with cognitive services and a range of others. Even for things like the app service plan, the descriptions are clear and concise, and that they really help you learn more about the services that you're using.
Yeah, and also, you know, because we were talking about money earlier on, we got the pricing details, right? So if we click on that, it will take us to all the pricing details for the service you're having a look at. Beautiful. All right, but let's go ahead. Let's create this. So I hit the create button, and this is a very typical experience that we have when we're creating a resource in Azure. We start off with a bunch of pages that we go through. The very first page allows us to specify a subscription. Now, you can either create resources in your own subscription, or if you know, like me, you've activated the sandbox, you'll see that there's probably just one subscription called the Concierge. And Glenn, you mentioned this earlier on, that's our free sandbox, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay. Next, we have resource groups. Now, Glenn, I'll just quickly get you to talk to me about resource groups. I know you love resource groups.
I do. But it turns out that resource groups, Kim, are really important for managing our projects in Azure, and allows us to group together all the resources so we can find them, really. And later, when we want to delete resources, we can just delete everything in a resource group. So if we have a project and it has a website, a database, some other services like storage, and we put them all in the one resource group. If we want to delete that project or just list everything within that particular project, a resource group is a good way to reference that. So when we're selecting a resource group, we can select an existing resource group if we have one. I think if you drop your list down and show the existing ones, but that's the one for the Concierge subscription, Kim. So if you're using the sandbox, there'll only be one resource group that you can select. But if you're using your own subscription, you can actually go ahead and create your own. But one of the important things for resource groups and also other Azure resources is how to name them as well. Kim, do you have any guidelines for naming things?
I not only have guidelines, I've got a really good link, Glenn. Cool. I just posted that into the chat window. So there's this really great page, right? That's sitting under the Cloud Adoption Framework, recommended naming and tagging conventions. Because one of the things with Azure is that when you create a solution, you very typically end up with a lot of different objects around the place. And if you're not naming them well, it can be difficult to find them and delete them, you know. And if you're a developer or if you have children, you'll know that naming things is hard. So, you know, have a look at this, and I'd recommend people take these guidelines and, you know, customize them for their own organization. But it's got some really good good information, and typically it has like prefixes and suffixes that you probably want to use. And by using these, it just makes things a little bit easier to find them later on. So for example, if I scroll down here a little bit, we can see that a resource group, the recommended naming is for a resource to prefix it with RG dash, right? And then, you know, as a suffix, you might have your environment as well. So, you know, for this, this resource group, what I might do, and I can't do this in the concierge subscription because we'll talk about that in a second, but I would come in here and I'd call it something like RG Van Aerstel Dev, for example, you know? And so I could then have a look at that resource later on. I could say, okay, it's a resource group, Van Aerstel Dev Environment, beautiful. Now you notice in my situation here, I don't have permissions, right? And that's because we're in the sandbox. The way the sandbox basically works is that it creates a resource group for you with this GUID. And that's kind of how it tracks all the objects and works out what it needs to delete later on. So you're kind of forced into that one. But I thought I'd mention resource groups because they are really, really important. Now, we mentioned naming. We also mentioned that naming is a little bit hard, right? So what we have here is we next are asked for our app service plan details, the name of our app service. So again, I would prefix this. So maybe AZ plan, Van Aerstel, dev. It doesn't really matter. This is not a public sort of address. Now, next we have our operating system. Glenn, I'm going to let you talk about this one. We can choose either Linux or Windows.
Yeah, well, it's kind of an interesting challenge. I mean, we could choose one or the other. For us as a .NET shop, and we're using .NET Core, so .NET Core will run on both. But sometimes it's just a personal preference on what you're most comfortable with and whether the operating system supports the app you're deploying. You might have some very subtle things that use very platform-specific things, or it might be that you're a Windows shop and you want to keep working with Windows, or you might be considering costs, so you might use the cost calculator to see which one works out the cheapest and use that as well. So for Van Aerstel, they run Windows internally, so they want to continue running with Windows. They're concerned about moving their code because they've only really tested it on Windows and they don't want to have to do too much work, so they're going to stick with the Windows approach.
Absolutely. Well, we'll stick with that one. Fantastic. So we can select Windows here. Now, next we have the region, right? So the region is essentially the region that your app services or your app service plan is going to be created in. And a very good tip here is you probably want to create that as close to your customers as possible to avoid network latency, right? So even though, Glenn, you and I are in Australia, we're not going to choose Australia because that's not where our customers are, right? We're going to leave it as central US, right? And that will just, as I said, reduce that network latency. So we'll stick with that. And now what we have is we've got our pricing tier. Well, it's all coming back to price today, Glenn. So we have these pricing tiers. Talk to me about pricing tiers.
Well, the pricing tier is really where you select the kind of server that you're getting. Remember, the app service is very similar to a physical machine where it has different capabilities. So if we click on the change button, Kim, that's probably a good thing to do right now. We'll be able to see the different tiers. And broadly speaking, there's three levels. There's the dev test, which is the one on the left. Mm-hmm. You just click on that. Excellent. So that's got free or shared. So those are the two base tiers. But essentially what happens is they run an app on the same Azure virtual machine as other app service apps, so including apps that are owned by other customers. And those tiers allocate CPU quotas to each app that runs on the shared resources, and the resources can't scale out. So free and shared plans are really the best for small scale personal projects with very limited traffic, or maybe just for spinning up something quickly to test things out. And if the dev test is not enough, or you've built something and now I need to take it to production, you can take it to that next tier, production. So that's where you'll find the basic, standard, premium, and premium V2 tier apps. And they run on dedicated Azure virtual machines. And only apps in the same app service plan share the same compute resources. So the standard service plan is best suited for live production workloads where you're publishing commercial applications to customers. which is probably the category that Van Arsdell's falling into as well. Now, the premium service plans support high capacity web apps where you really don't want the additional costs of a dedicated isolated plan. Now, Kim, those isolated plans, the last tier on the right, that tier runs dedicated Azure virtual machines on dedicated Azure virtual networks. And that provides network isolation on top of compute isolation to your apps. So it provides the maximum scale out capability that you can get. But you'd only really select an isolated service plan where you have a specific requirement for the highest levels of security and performance. But one thing I want to mention, Kim, is that if you select a plan, even if you're just doing development testing and you need to move it, you can actually scale it up or down to change the requirements. In fact, if you click on some of the different plans, like if you click on D1, you'll see that it's got a different list of included features. So for example, D1 is the first one that will give you custom domains for your website. Or if you look at if you go into the production, the S1 will give you SSL.
Yeah.
So little things like that are important to know, and you can move up and down the tiers as you need to.
It's definitely very powerful.
It is. I was going to say, Kim, I've got a website that I run that's really busy for a few months of the year and they're quiet for the other times of the year. So I actually scale mine down during those quiet times just to save a bit of money as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, as you mentioned, Glenn, sort of for a production environment for Van Arsdell, we might very well go an S1. Probably what we'll do right at the moment, just while we're playing around and we're going through the class here, we'll just choose an F1. Okay, so a free tier. And you know what the cool thing is, you know, you select one of these, you hit the apply button, and you're done, right? So now we've got our SKU and our size, free F1. Beautiful. All right, so from here, we've given it all the information that we need. We can click our review and create button. And it's then going to give us a little summary before we commit this, telling us our subscription, our operating system, et cetera. If that looks all right, we're just going to go ahead and hit the create button. And then it's going to basically go and deploy those resources. So this will take a moment and it takes you to a nice little page, which shows you the deployment overview. And this will populate as it's actually deploying those resources. Should probably only take a minute or so, Glenn. But you know, if you think about what we're doing here, right? We're provisioning a machine, right? Effectively, or you know, we're actually provisioning onto we're sharing because we're in the free plan, but we're actually provisioning a resource. And you were mentioning earlier on, you've done a lot of work in on premises. What would you have to have done?
What I used to do, Kim, to get machines and set them up is I'd have to fill in paperwork. Sometimes I'd order custom servers and have to wait, like this was a long time ago, but 4 to 8 weeks for them to be delivered and then install the operating system, install the patches, do all sorts of things that would just take forever to get it done. But the cloud just takes that pain away. I love it. So it probably won't be that long and we'll have that app service plan up and running, but it's certainly a much nicer environment to work with. And you know what, if you make a mistake, Kim, you can just go, okay, I'm going to delete that server and make a new one the right way without having to do a huge returns policy.
Yeah, absolutely. So so we flick back over, Glenn, while you're giving us your sad story of your previous life, our deployment completed. So, we'll throw a bit of confetti on for that. We love confetti. So that has now deployed and we can then go to that resource and we can have a look at it. So what we have is we've got ourselves an app service plan. It's on the free tier and it's going to give us some stats about that as well. Okay, so effectively what we've done now, if we sort of just take a moment, we've created that machine, but we actually don't have anything on that machine at the moment, right? So probably what we want to do is we want to go ahead and we want to create a app plan, right? or an app service, sorry.
An app service.
So I'm going to go back and I'm going to sort of create a resource here. And again, so this one's a little bit confusing, I think, from the naming perspective. It's actually under web apps is what we're after, right? Because app services encompasses a broad range of things. So it's available for us right from the menu. So we'll go ahead, we'll select this. And now we're going to go through a similar set of steps, I suppose. First of all, we select our subscription. So we're in the concierge. And again, if you were doing this in your own subscription, you might very well add it to the same resource group as what you would have created when you, or what you would have selected when you created the app service plan. In our case, we're stuck with the learn one, and it's going to delete that later on. And then we're back to naming. Okay, so if we're going to name this, the guidance here is AZ app. Okay, and then we might have Van Arsdale. And we'll put dev, right? So this has to be globally unique, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It'll be an actual URL on that you can hit using a browser.
Yeah. So we got a little tick here. So it's going to be available at azapp-vanarsdal-dev as your websites. We're going to want to publish. What are we going to do? We're not using Docker containers. We're not that cool. But instead, what we'll do is we'll go through with code. And there were some questions about runtime stacks earlier on. So Glenn, we can select that here, right?
Yeah, we can. There's a lot of stacks that are running up there, Kim. I mean, we've got all the .NET Core variants. We've got other frameworks as well. Ruby, Python, Node, Java. There's really such a range and a list of frameworks as well. I think there was a question from Ken about the .NET framework. So if you want to specifically go to that, let's highlight that for him. But yeah, I think the .NET framework, what's the minimum that we're running there, Kim?
So I'd say, well, ASP.NET version 3.5.
Yeah. So yeah. I think Rob answered that question there before in the chat window as well. So you can see the variants. And I've certainly had some old .NET Framework 2 projects that I've moved over to .NET 3.5 without too much pain, and then uploaded them to Azure, and they work really quite well. So you can do it. Sometimes there's a little bit of tweaking, sometimes none actually. But yeah, just see what you can do, Ken. I imagine there isn't too much effort to move it there. But yeah, there's so many frameworks. And also, Kim, if you select a different operating system, you'll have a different list of platforms that are provided as well. So it might be something you want to experiment with just based on the configuration of your project. I think for ours, we're really okay because we know what our framework is, which is .NET Core. So we're going to select the .NET Core version that's appropriate for Van Arsdale.
Yeah, and we're not on .NET Core, but we have .NET Core 2.1 with long-term support. So that's going to be appropriate for us. Cool. Okay. Again, we've got the operating system question. You know, do we put it onto Windows or Linux? And again, it's a bit of a price/personal preference. So we're going to stick with Windows, I think, Glenn.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll stick with Windows. It's what we're familiar with. Also, we've got the region. So again, you want to put that close to your customers. That's going to give you the best result. And then we have our app service plan. So what it's done now is it's basically had a look at the app service plans that we have. It says we've got this one called AZ Plan Van Arsdale Dev, which is on a free tier. We can select that. And it actually turns out, Glenn, that you know, that whole step we went through before of deploying the app service plan, we could have actually just done it from here. So it's certainly possible, but I think, you know, well, one of the things we wanted to do is we wanted to create those individual elements just to make sure, or just to reinforce how the two are related between the app service plan and app service. We got our app service plan and we can see that's a free tier. And then we can go through the steps. Now, I'm actually going to turn something off, Glenn, because I think it'll make it a little bit quicker for us to deploy this. I'm going to the next one. I'm just going to turn off Application Insights. Okay, because we're not using that at the moment. We'll keep back to monitoring in our final session, but it'll just stop it having to spin up an Application Insights as well. So with that, I think we can review and create. Again, we come to our summary page and we see all of our good information in here. Have a quick scoot through, but you know, as you mentioned, Glenn, if you create it and you did it wrong, you can always kill it.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, beautiful.
You just pay for the time that you use.
Yeah.
So that utility mode of the cloud is an amazing thing.
Yeah, fantastic. So we'll leave this go for a moment. It'll probably take a minute or two to create that. Let's have a look and see if there's any questions, Glenn, in the meantime.
Cool. So there's a couple of questions about .NET Framework 2. So I assume Docker will be an option for .NET Framework 2. If you can find a container for it, then I imagine it would be as well. And Chad has a question, could you use the older .NET 2 if you do IaaS? Absolutely, you could. It's not supported, but you could install it and run it. In fact, before I moved to .NET, I was running on Delphi, which is an older system, but I've got some old code from that time that I run on IaaS because I can support it there. It's just you with IaaS, you actually have maximum flexibility, but you also have the cost of maintenance around that as well. Cool, there's a few other questions, Kim. I feel like I'm hogging the questions. Kim, did you want to answer some as well?
There's one about the sandbox here. What's the question here? Let's see if this fits into my little, there we are. It does fit into my little thing downstairs. So the question is the Learn Sandbox available as a one-time use or can we use it multiple times in 4-hour cycles? So there is some limits. I'm not sure what they are off the top of my head actually, but basically when you spin up that sandbox, it's like when you take a Learn module, it'll exist for 4 hours and then clean itself up. But if you go back in there, you can create another one. It'll be a fresh start essentially. And then that'll exist for 4 hours. There is probably, and I don't know, I should probably know, there is probably a limit for how often you can do that. I don't think you can do it all day, every day.
No.
Yeah. And here's a question, Glenn. Let's see what we hear. Why do we need to choose an operating system in our app service plan as well as a web app?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've always kept them consistent, I must admit, because the app service plan is the machine that you're running on. Unless there's other things, I don't tend to mix the operating systems that much. Maybe that's something Rob can answer. Hopefully Rob could look that up. Do you know the answer to that, Kim?
I don't know the answer, but I suspect it has something to do with the fact that you can now run
Linux
on Windows and stuff like that. But I don't know. Like yourself, I'm not quite beardy enough to run Linux all the time. I tend to stick with Windows.
Yeah, I mean that's interesting. I wrote a Linux book years ago, Kim, but I have no ability to grow a beard, so I find that a nice contrast.
Yeah, fantastic. I can see here, actually, Chad has answered. He's about the Learn modules, and he said, looks like you can go through 4 a day. There we go.
Oh, cool.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And there is also what's the best way to optimize costs in an app service plan? Right. That's probably something that we're best to have a look at a link for. I suppose that, you know, the best way to optimize costs of anything is to, you know, not get too big an app service plan. You know what I mean?
Use only what you need. And I think there's deeper discussions around costs really with Azure, because if you're running an app service, there's additional things you'll connect to like storage and databases. So you have to think about the costs as a holistic view of what your application is really running. That's a longer conversation depending on what you're trying to build and deploy. And you can look at other choices to help minimize that cost. I would actually look at some of the Ignite sessions or some of the other resources on minimizing costs within Azure. You'll probably find some great videos from conferences around Microsoft conferences or similar around, but that would be my recommendation.
Yeah, but we'll find some links and we'll shoot them out later on. Or perhaps Rob can find some. and just back on our app service, sorry, in our sandbox, there was people have done some further investigation. Turns out you can have 10. There we go. One of 10 sandboxes for today. Beautiful. I love it when people answer the questions. Lovely. All right. In the meantime, our deployment's complete. So again, imagine what that would have required in your old on-site, Glenn. We've now got this, and we've got this resource, right? So we can go to this resource, and this is having a look at our app service. We can see that up the top. You'll always see a little indication of what we're looking at here. So let me go full screen here for a second. And what we can see here is we've got a URL up the top here, and that is our public URL, right? That's actually the URL of our website. So if we go and click on that, it should be available. In fact, there it is, right? We've got our app service or our website, but we don't have any code on here, do we?
No, not at all.
Not yet. All right, so how do we go about doing that, Glenn?
Yeah, well, I mean, in Azure, there's a number of ways you can go about it. So we could actually get code from GitHub, also from a zip file, even from Dropbox or OneDrive. But if you click on the Deployment Center, you can actually see some of those options. And if you want to learn more about those options, stay tuned for one of our upcoming sessions, and we'll actually cover the automated deployments. But for today, we're actually going to just walk you through deploying an application directly from Visual Studio. So we're going to switch over to Visual Studio 2019. I think you've got Visual Studio 2019 there, Kim. I'll put you in the driver's seat. So you might want to open up the solution, and we can look at how we can publish to our app service from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So it turns out I've got the solution open here. So what I've done is I've just forked the solution, cloned it locally, and then opened it. So we've got the real estate solution. And in future classes, we'll walk through a bit more of this structure. For the moment, what we kind of really want to do is we just want to see if it's working, and then we want to go and publish it. And you know, there's a lot of different techniques that you can use to deploy. You know, you can use command line scripts and API calls, and GitHub repos, lots of different stuff. But using Visual Studio is certainly one of the easier approaches. And sometimes, you know, I don't want to sort of bring it up too much, but sometimes there is a saying, you know, friends don't let friends right-click publish. But it is a really, really effective way of doing it. But we will be covering other ways of doing that in the future. But look, for the moment, what I want to do is I want to see whether my solution builds. So I'm going to go ahead and build that solution. And all things going well, we have a build succeeded, right? That's good news. And I can also run this locally as well. So I'm going to start this up, and we'll have a little, you know, look at the Van Arsdale site.
Cool. We want to see that our reference implementation works before we deploy it. It's ideally what everyone should be doing. Check your local reference, then deploy. Actually, ideally, we'll be using some facilities we'll show you about in another session. But for today, it looks like we've got that running, Kim. I can see some properties there, Kim.
We can see some properties. I'll just get us out of the way here. So this is the Van Arsdale website. It's, you know, it's not a super complex website, but it has a list bunch of properties in here. We can select a property. We can go and have a look at the details of that property, see how many rooms it is, see how much it costs, etc. There's also some admin aspects of this as well, what we'll talk about later on. But, you know, for now, Glenn, I think the good news is that that it's running, right? It's running locally.
Yeah, so our next step is really to publish it. So we'll stop the application from running at the moment. We'll head back over to Visual Studio. Cool. And what we'll do is we'll find the project and the solution, right-click on that project, and select the publish option.
All right, we can see publish right there.
Awesome. And that'll actually bring up the publish target dialog. And in that dialog, we're really just given a number of different options where we want to publish. So in our case, we want to publish to an app service. And also, we've already created an app service, so we can actually select the select existing. But if you wanted to, you could have actually set up the app service plan and app service in this Visual Studio dialogue as well.
So we could have saved all that time in the portal.
Yeah, that's true. But if you your next project was a PHP project that you wanted to upload, you would have set it up in the portal and maybe used a different approach. But the portal is really the fundamental between all frameworks and tools that you can use. But it's good to know how to use it from Visual Studio as well. So we want to select an app service. So let's go ahead and move on to the next step, Kim. What are we going to do?
Create profile.
Yeah. Excellent. And then from there, we select the appropriate subscription. So we're looking for the concierge. And then we can look at the various resources.
And you know what? I think because I had this opened from yesterday, I think it's not going to show. You know what I'm going to do? What do we do, Glenn, when we have problems?
Have you tried turning it off and on again? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I'm going to try turning it off and on.
All right. I can feel someone's going to post an IT crowd GIF in the chat window.
let's see how we go here.
So that's all right. Luckily, you've got a very effective and beastly machine, so it won't take too long for the...
Actually, Visual Studio is a lot faster these days as well.
Yeah, that's true as well.
Mm. But let's hope this works. Let's go publish. Okay, we're going to app service. We have an existing one. Create a profile. It's actually updating my subscription. So I think the problem is that I effectively created a subscription while the dialogue was, whilst Visual Studio was still running. So let's just give that a second.
Okay. So we'll find the concierge this time. And there is the app service.
And there we are. Who said turning it off and on doesn't work? Okay, great. So we have that selected and we hit okie dokie. Okay, because we've specified the app service.
So that's created the publishing profile for us to use. And once we click that publish button on the right, that'll start the publish process, which will upload all of our files for our project up into the app service. And then once that's live coding to that. Thanks, Rob. Once we click that, it'll start that publishing process. And then once it's finished, it'll show the link down in the output and then also open up a browser showing us our application running on an actual hosted Azure app service.
Beautiful.
So why don't we go ahead and do that, Kim?
Yep. I just thought I'd mention, you know, it's good to have a look at this summary information here as well sometimes. Good point. Yeah, and that's you can do some customization of it in there if you need to. But otherwise you can just smash the publish button and then it will go ahead and it will build that. And this will probably take shouldn't take more than a minute or so. In the meantime, let's have a look for any questions, Glenn.
Yes. Feel free to write some.
Something I will draw attention to in regards to the question earlier on of best practices for minimizing costs. Rob's posted a few links into the chat window. So Troy Hunt has some good articles. Microsoft Docs has some cost saving recommendations. Beautiful. So thanks for that, Rob.
Excellent. Yeah, Troy's articles are actually really important. So if you're minimizing data costs as well. For particular situations though, I wouldn't say it's for the transactional data like you might need in SQL Server, but for things like have I been born website, that's globally really popular. He has a lot of data that's managed from it and he shows good ways to minimize those costs.
Absolutely. Beautiful. All right. So, Glenn, I think we're back, and I think we've deployed it, right? So, if I go and have a look down here in my output, it basically went and published that, put it out to a URL here, and then restarted the web app, and it actually opened a browser for me here as well. So, in the browser, we can see we have our Van Aerstal application. If we have a look up at the URL up here, we can see that it is indeed a public URL, right? So you know, people can feel free to access that as well. Like maybe I should post it in the chat in case anyone wants to hit it. So that's it. Now, there is one thing here, Glenn, that I don't have a lot of properties. What's going on here?
Well, we've published the web app, but we haven't actually moved the database over to the cloud yet either, Kim. So that's going to be what we do in our next step. But for now, we've actually done a fair bit. We've moved that web app, step one. That's pretty important. But we'll move the database as well. Bit of confetti. Woo. Excellent. But yeah, that's a really important first step. We've moved our application to the cloud. In our next session, we'll move our database to the cloud. We'll be able to see those properties at that point.
Yeah, fantastic. So I think we've achieved quite a bit today, right? You know, we talked about Van Arsdell. Van Arsdell are hosting their website on premises. You know, they were going to expand their business. They want to be able to manage their expectations in terms of increasing their traffic. So, you know, it was time for them to go to the cloud. And, you know, they wanted to get rid of all of that infrastructure. And, you know, what we've covered off, I suppose, is first of all, we talked about those different hosting models that are available. So a lot of different options. Platforms as service seem to work very well for them, with optimal solution for them. And then what we did is we very quickly and very easily went and deployed the Van Arsdell project into an Azure App Service from Visual Studio without actually making any code changes at all.
So that's great. You know what? Without Azure, Van Arsdell would have had to invest in new hardware as well. And it's really difficult predicting how much performance you need. And you'd likely buy more than you actually needed as well, just to be on the safe side. But you could also underbuy, which is just another problem again. They'd also have to consider buying more bandwidth and additional software licenses, and all the infrastructure would have to be maintained by installing updates and patches and configuring the operating system and the web service components. So using an app service on Azure allows us to not think about all those issues, hardware licensing and maintenance. It's really abstracting that hardware layer, and we can just dynamically increase or decrease performance as we need. And that really helps reduce costs, allows the team to focus on delivering value instead of spending time installing operating system patches, and lets us move and change where we need to as a business.
Yeah, it gives you amazing flexibility. Absolutely. All right. So before we sign off, I did want to leave people with some great resources to complement what we covered in today's session. If you do go over to the Learn website, and I should probably put a link to that down below, there's a really great learning path called Deploying a Website to Azure with Azure App Services. And so that is definitely a great one to have a look at and go through. Beautiful. So this has just been the first of what will be a number of different sessions. In our next session, we're going to actually go and address that issue where we haven't migrated the database yet. And you know what's cool, Glenn, is that we're actually going to be able to migrate that database without making any code changes as well.
Even less code changes.
Amazing. Even less than zero. Yeah, fantastic.
That's good. That's the right amount of numbers for me. That's perfect.
Yeah. So hopefully you can join us for the next session. And of course, you know, thanks to everyone for joining us in today's session. Do go and have a look at the Van Arsdell repo if you want to go and have a walk through the code and you know, step through what we went through today. I put Glenn and my links or Twitter links down below. So feel free to reach out to us. Glenn, have you got anything to say before we sign off?
No, just a sincere thanks for everyone attending and interacting, answering the questions, adding a lot of value to what we all learned here today as well. So thanks.
Fantastic. Oh, I should also mention as well, you know, as this is one of our first sessions, we do love any feedback you have. So I think you'll find that Rob put a link to the feedback earlier on. He probably will post it again. There we are. Actually, Matt Calder did. He said, I'm just looking at the chat window here, put a link out to the survey. So please give us some feedback. We always love that. And he's also put a link there to sign up for the next session as well. So hopefully we can see you in the next session. Let's migrate a database in that one. All right. But for now, thanks a lot, everyone. Take care. I'll see you next time.